Hello, and welcome again to an episode of 10,000 Hours. You'll be listening to episode 6. I'm Vince Cochi. I'm one of your hosts of 10,000 Hours, and this is...
Grant Spanier. Hi.
Hey. Hey, buddy. How are you doing again?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Today, on episode number 6, we talk to Elliot Mattson, designer, illustrator, animator, and the creator of Danger Russ, a hilarious web cartoon series about a man, a daredevil, attempting to commit suicide. Funny stuff. What did we talk about on today's episode, Grant?
Wow. You know, we touched on quite a range of topics. Specifically, we were talking about teaching ourselves new skills, kind of a shifting educational paradigm.
I think that's some heavy stuff. It got deep.
Elliot, what a guy. What a smart, level-headed dude.
It's very smart, very astute, and also pretty funny.
Yeah, real funny guy. And I'd like to do a special shout-out, a special thanks again to our sponsor of this week's episode, which is Harvest. I know you're familiar with it, Vince, because I spout about it all the time. I'm a big fan of Harvest.
Yeah, you do.
It's a time-tracking...
For good reason.
Yeah, of course. It's great. Time tracking, invoicing, managing budgets. I think especially for freelancers or even companies, especially in the like consulting, creative kind of business, it's a fantastic tool. It makes invoicing and time tracking so easy. I love it. I do it on my phone. I don't have Android. Do you have Android, Vince?
No, I have iOS. But...
Okay. I'm an iOS guy too, but it works on Android, I guess, allegedly. I've never seen it myself. I can't say.
I would believe it though.
Yeah. So it's a real great product, and I would suggest you try it out. At least take a poke around, see what's going on there. You can get a free month right away, and your first month is 50% off if you use the promo code 10K. That's 10K. Especially for the 10,000 Hours listeners. And thanks for listening, by the way, guys.
Yeah, thanks as always.
Yeah, cool. So go get Harvest. That's at getharvest.com. And enjoy this episode with Mr. Elliot Mattson.
I think that you will. Stage is set. Are you guys comfortable? What are you wearing?
What am I wearing?
Right now?
What are you wearing?
I'm shirtless, dude.
What? Just like, what? Just asking. Why you? Don't be weird about it.
I'm wearing jeans and a t-shirt right now.
Just the part of the episode every week that we do.
What are you wearing? Part.
Yeah. The sad part is we usually do ask our guests this.
Right before, what are you working on? What? I mean, it's not weird, man. It's only weird if you make it weird.
Hey, Pete Holmes, right?
Pete Holmes.
Yeah. Is that?
That's you made it weird.
Pete Holmes.
You don't know Pete Holmes? Oh, man.
I could
talk for an entire podcast about Pete Holmes.
Please don't.
Fuck. Hold on. I'm Googling. God damn it.
I'm just glad we don't have to put him in the show notes because it's before we started, actually.
Hey, this is on record right now, literally. So.
It's literally on record.
Let's get it kicked off. Vinny, I think maybe I would actually like to hear you introduce our guest today.
I'd be honored to.
Would you?
Yeah. We're here with Elliot Mattson, an art director, designer, and illustrator extraordinaire, currently of Danger Russ fame, a web cartoon series that is just fucking hilarious. And yeah, he's joining us on the cast today, and I'm really excited to introduce him. Thanks for coming on, Elliot.
Thank you for having me. I'm a longtime listener.
Well, don't start the show off with a lie, man.
I am a longtime listener. I listen to all episodes.
Well, now you're dating it.
Yeah,
I'm going to bleep out. Here's the thing. Nobody say anything else. I'm going to bleep out how many episodes he said, and I'm going to leave it in the dark. Elliot, we really appreciate your support, man. It means a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, I love doing my own projects.
I got to say, Elliot, also, I got the got your fan mail, and man, these really kind things. You didn't need to send some of those photos. It was a little weird, but it's great to know we have super fans out there.
All right, all right, let's kick this thing off. Grant,
Vinny,
what have you been working
on this
week?
Yeah, start me off. Yeah, light me up. What am I working on? Finally, finally, Vince, we have shipped Green Room
Trumpets.
Issue 2. Yeah, man. We alluded to it in many, many episodes.
Every episode, maybe.
Every episode ever. And that will be out right around the first week of March. And I'm not going to say how far away that is from right now. Because, again, leave them in the dark. Keep them guessing. That's a callback. So I just finished that up, working on a couple of pitches with some agencies, doing some really fun stuff, man. I'm pretty pumped up right now.
Awesome, dude. Very happy to hear that.
What about you, Vincent?
It's been actually a very busy week at the office. I've been taking my work home a little bit. But in my free time, I have, and I know, hold your breaths, a writer who's going to say this, been working on my novel just a little bit. Just a little bit. I just want to get the first chapter kind of hashed out before I start showing
people. Okay, hold on. Okay. We don't have to dig too deep into this, but I've never heard anything ever about this novel.
I've been trying to keep it under wraps. I don't want to be the guy that talks about the novel and then never has the novel.
Oh,
you know?
This is that. You know? Yep.
But I think you'll be able to read a rough draft along with some of my other confidants in the next couple weeks, so...
A rough draft of the entire thing?
No. Hell no. Just chapter one. Chapter 0.
Okay.
0.01.
Hell yeah, man. Vinny, and now you're accountable. You've made yourself accountable. You're putting into practice the lessons
that
of episode one, starting
on the show,
something new.
Yes, man.
Gosh. You're a shining example, man.
Let's not go that far.
Okay.
Elliot,
hit us.
What have you been working on this week?
I've been pretty busy at work, too, actually. But I'm working on the next episode of Danger Russ, kind of been putting on the back burner lately because there's a couple other animated shorts I'm working on as well. So,
whoa.
Ooh.
Yeah,
so give everybody a little bit of context here. What do you mean by animated short, or what do you do?
Yeah, tell us about Danger Russ 2 while you're at it, man.
Oh, yeah. Man. Okay, this is a shotgun approach. Okay, so Danger Russ is...
this guy comes in here criticizing us.
Yeah, so Danger Russ is an animated comedy web series that my friend Jeff Hippio and I started because both of us love cartoons. We've always wanted to work on a project together. He's actually a biomedical engineer, so he doesn't have a lot of creative outlet in his job, obviously. And so we talked for a long time about what we wanted to do just as a fun project, not really intending it to go anywhere, obviously, but we... I just started this series, and if you want me to give you the log line, if you want me to...
Yeah, hit us with the quick summary of what it is.
Oh, the log line.
Do you want me to
sell
you on this? Okay. All right. So, Danger Us is a comedy about a passively suicidal daredevil traveling across the country with his inattentive and incompetent crew who are inadvertently aiding his destiny to die trying to die. So...
That old trope.
Right? You see it every day. No, that's like one of my favorite things about the series is how just weird the premise is, and I love it.
Yeah, so basically...
That's fantastic.
Obviously, because of time, you know, each episode is roughly a minute and a half, and it just centers around two twin brothers who are the very horrible crew of this daredevil who... basically would be happier dead than alive. And that's sort of why he hired
and
them.
And he kind of looks like a paunchy, older Evel Knievel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it, and I'm a big fan as well. I've been there from the beginning, so there's some mutual appreciation going on. I really love it, man. I think it's
great.
I think it's funny.
Thank you.
I think it's clever.
Thank you.
Well executed.
Yeah.
Vinny, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked, Grant, because this is actually a perfect segue into our topic, and the topic is learning new things and maybe a little more accurately teaching ourselves how to do new things and how to go about doing that. And why it is such a great segue is because, correct me if I'm wrong, Elliot, but you're not a classically trained animator, yet on Danger Russ and some of your other work, you act as animator. Is that correct?
That is correct. I taught myself basically everything I know. And so I sort of like to do that on...
in animation.
In animation. And, you know, various other fields. But
pursuits.
Also in my life. Also everything I've ever done.
What sort of inspires me about figuring out a new project is all of the other things that it entails. So if you have a goal in mind and there's all these other things you have to learn. So in order to do Dangerous, you know, that was just sort of a pie in the sky idea, as it were. But I had to go and learn a couple new programs, read some stuff, figure out, you know, how a show is put together, and just sort of go with what I thought was right and what I've always loved watching cartoons. So mm-hmm. it's sort of putting my own spin on what, you know, what should be, what is, what could be.
So maybe mm-hmm. not exactly what our best practices, just what works best for you. Do you want to, like, go into a little more detail about that? Like, when you started Dangerous, was that, like, the first large-scale animation you ever did?
Not really. I knew Flash, and Dangerous is done in a combination of Flash and After Effects. So I knew Flash mm-hmm. a bit, and I'd done a couple little things. But, yeah, that was definitely, you know, biting off more than I can chew, but that's always good, I think. Yeah.
That's what it's about, though. Uh-huh.
That's how you get a bigger appetite.
Oh, well said.
Thank you. So you're using After Effects, you're using Flash. How long does a typical episode take? Or what does that process look like?
It's a process from start to finish.
You know, you're writing it with...
So Jeff and I write each episode, then we record the voiceover, so we do all the voices as well. And then after mm-hmm. that, you basically take... while we're recording the voiceover, we have a storyboard laid out, so we know sort of what's going on, and then I animate it scene mm-hmm. by scene, so in sort of chunks. It's just a little more digestible in order to do it instead of taking a huge undertaking like that, doing it all at once. So you have to go in and lip sync all the characters, and then after you lip sync them, you have to make them interact with each other, and then I also, you know, do all the illustration and all the background design, all the camera movements, all the directing, all the music. So it's just sort of so
very much like a one man band kind of thing going on there.
Is it an otter? Vince, am I using that word right?
What's that?
An otter? Auteur? Auteur?
Auteur.
I thought you said an otter.
Dude, okay.
Yeah. I thought you meant the sea creature.
Here's the thing, Vince. Maybe we can put this in the show notes, but there was a moment. I don't know what I think it was probably episode one or two. Probably one, I think, where I used the word auteur, and you accused me of saying it like a douche. And then I was like, oh, like otter. Man. And since then, I've thought the word was otter when I've been like a part. Vince,
oh,
part of the reason.
Oh, no, man. I didn't mean it. I was just being a dick. You know me.
Now I do. Okay, so auteur?
Auteur.
God, I was right from... Well, I was saying it a little bit douchey, but man...
I don't think you can say that word. God.
Sorry
not
about
douchey.
That, brother.
So.
Yeah, thank you, Elliot. Hey, Elliot, what's your schedule looking like? I'm looking for a new co-host. Oh,
come on.
Too much. I'm sorry. So, all right, you talked us through the process, but so, like, how long is that take? Like, are you guys publishing regularly, or what does that look like?
Yeah, so basically, obviously, we do this outside of work. I do this when I get home, and...
Wink. No, I'm just kidding.
Exactly. So...
I'm sorry, that's
so, like,
worst.
A minute and a half episode from start to finish could take upwards of, you know, with all the recording, everything I'm talking about here, you know, it could take 10 hours.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's not that much.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's like,
I mean, I don't mean it offensively.
Yeah.
No, I didn't mean it offensively. I meant I would have pegged it at a much higher amount
of
time.
It sounds like just an enormous backlog of tasks, but has it gotten like more efficient as like writing new episodes has gone along?
Yeah, especially, just the writing process gets more efficient because you know, you learn the characters a little bit more, but also as you use more sets and more characters, then you just sort of reuse that same stuff over and over again. It's like you build an asset library almost.
Oh, sure.
Ah.
Sure.
Yeah. So that, definitely helps. And that's why when I do these extra animated shorts that I do, it sort of takes a long time. Cause basically, you know, you think about if you're filming a video, right? You find a set, you have people, but everything in animation you have to make. So you have to, if you want something, you're going to have to make it, and then you have to just have this whole library of stuff that you use, you know?
Uh-huh.
Man, insanity.
That's interesting. So what's an example of, like, a skill or a task or, like, a program that you needed to teach yourself when you were getting into this?
After Effects. I'd never used it before. And so After Effects is basically, like, Flash on crack. And
I think that's on the box,
yeah,
right?
I think so.
Flash on crack.
Yeah, it's just like some white powder on the box. But, yeah, so I had to learn that basically just through trial and error. Anyone who's used an Adobe product knows that they're pretty intuitive once you know one. But
they really are.
I think that's After Effects is a little different beast, and so there's a lot to it. But like anything, I always just like to try things and figure it out for myself. I do watch videos and stuff, but
yeah, what kind of resources did you, if any, did you tap to kind of like build your knowledge about it?
I mainly use YouTube, and still when I run into anything today, YouTube is sort of the go-to. But lynda.com
yeah.
is really a great resource as well.
Sure,
we'll show notes that.
Yeah,
Lynda, she's a sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
Cool,
it's a fantastic resource.
Interesting.
Yeah,
you bring up a very good point. Grant, I'm not going to put you on the spot, but I know you have a lot to say about this.
Sure.
The fact that you can go on YouTube, and you touched on this, Elliot, and kind of just, if you want to learn something, you can learn essentially anything you want just by clicking on a couple video links.
Man, this is a dangerous one to get me wound up on.
Let's wind you up, man. Go nuts.
All right. So here's where I'm going to start with this. And it needs a preface because at the end of the day, education and experiences are so valuable. But what this is bringing to mind, and I value my education. I graduated from St. Thomas, University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota. Fine school, and there were some great professors there. But somebody recently, I was telling you that somebody from actually the advertising program at the U had reached out to me, was asking some questions about some class project thing. And one of the questions on this little profile was, if you could do anything differently, what would you do?
And it's a loaded question, don't you think?
It is. It said if anything. So they gave you an out. But what I said was I would have dropped out of school at a certain point.
Ooh.
Which is not to say that I didn't gain a lot by being in school and that it didn't have a ton of benefits. But the reality is, and you know, that's of course speculative. That's really easy to say. But the reality is the things I do and the things I want to do not necessarily, they require a certain level of education and a lot of things. But to be honest, most of the things and experience and really the good stuff, I kind of got outside of school. And again, I got a lot from school, but outside of it is kind of where the real learning and the real experience started. So for me, I'm all about either online resources, which are great, but at the end of the day, I would say in-person learning is so necessary, but that can happen in so many different ways. And a lot of times for me, that's just my collaborative network, the people I work with day to day. And that's really where I learn. And just, of course, like experimenting and playing around and just diving into this stuff.
the noise to signify the end of the thought, I like it.
Well, it's just like it's not necessarily a popular position. Like,
but
I'm not hating on school. It's just like for me, man, I don't know. It's like,
but I think it is becoming a more popular position because I feel very much the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my parents about this actually a few weeks ago. They didn't really like my stance on it, obviously.
Of course.
Being from a different generation, but I said if I could do it again, not that I don't deeply value like my college experience, but I would have gone back. I would have gone to community college for 2 years.
Yes.
I would have gone to portfolio school for 2 years, and frankly, I would have a better portfolio and a better education than I have right now.
Boom, ba boom, ba boom. All right, man. Hey, listen, you've empowered me to own my position.
Please, dude, please own it.
Yeah,
and
it's,
so,
I mean,
and
we're in a specific industry, though.
I want your
yeah.
thoughts on this, too, Elliot, quick, before we jump into how this relates to the topic at large.
Yeah, I definitely agree with what you're saying. I mean, if nothing else, then besides not going to school, I think school will definitely in the future skew more towards online resources just in general. I mean, the experience of knowing people in person and socializing obviously is important to an extent, but where education is a factor, I think that people and kids today are learning far much more online than they would in a classroom.
One, just from experience. Yeah. I mean, you figured out so much when you dove into animating that thing. It's inevitable, right? The process of trying to make a thing real, it's like putting a gun to your head, and you know, there's a lot of motivation to learn it.
Exactly, and you don't just learn the thing you're trying to learn. You learn a lot of necessary sort of tributary skills on the way to learning that thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely think, you know, it takes more motivation to do that, though. I think the media and media resources are so powerful, but you need that extra motivation
to go out, because you have to seek them and find them first, which takes an extra, it's like an extra barrier of work to learn the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think I'm right there?
Yeah.
Right. So it's a land of opportunity, but it's also a land where no one's going to hold your hand like a school, you know, will. It really will. It provides structure, provides an environment of accountability. But for the self-starters, for the people who don't care about that and who just really want to learn stuff and have that kind of innate or manufactured curiosity, man, that's huge opportunity. That's really exciting.
It's really exciting. And I mean, maybe disagree with me if you don't agree, obviously. Disagree. Yeah. If you don't agree, disagree. What I meant to say is tell me if you don't agree, but I think that barrier shrinks every single day. I think it's less and less difficult to find the information you need.
Oh, definitely. Oh,
yeah. I mean, there is, I mean, Vince, there is like almost no barrier. I know, I think I've talked to you about this before, like that thing I was working on over the summer called Krypton. Where that came from was the insight that these MOOCs, these massive online courses, the information to classes, like Stanford classes, is online. You can get that information. Yeah, but the reality is there's a 2% completion rate. It's about building that system of accountability or that motivation, whatever. And that's, I think, what really kind of, you know, that is, learning does happen in person a lot of times. It does happen with other people.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of what that led to. But
even when I've been making my cartoons and doing animation, you'd be surprised at how specific a problem I can have that I can just YouTube, and there's literally some 10-year-old kid that has a video about that exact thing. So it's just, it's insane.
That's so. Yeah. Oh man.
That was really cool. And actually, so I was sort of thinking of a question relating to this as you guys were speaking. So from podcastee to podcaster, if it's okay if I interject with a question.
Hey, yeah, flip it on, please.
I'm going to interview you now. So I was actually talking to you about this the other day, Vince. So I told you this word. I don't know if you'll remember it, but the word is autodidact. So it's...
Autodidact. I remember the word. Yeah. Please,
so
tell us.
It's basically a self-taught individual, and it's used to describe someone like Leonardo da Vinci or Ben Franklin. And these are people that they taught themselves how to do something, but the thing they taught themselves didn't exist. So I'd like your guys' thoughts on, so someone like me, someone like dozens of other people, or hundreds, millions of other people that are learning things on their own, is being an autodidact a new definition today? Are you still self-taught by going and motivating yourself to go on YouTube and learning things, or is that not being self-taught because you're being taught by others?
Well, that's kind of been my opinion is, like, I talk a lot about design to people because the reality is I wasn't going to school for design, and I ended up getting an individualized design minor, but I took two classes, and they were both taught by fine artist painters. And so I literally got zero any program knowledge from these classes.
Zilch.
Yeah, and I think some people would assume that I do that in my day-to-day. Like, I get hired as a designer for a lot of projects, and people assume that I went to school for it. And I'm like, well, no. And I don't say I was self-taught. I say, yeah, I learned it on my own. I accessed the information and the wisdom of other people. That being said, you know, I did teach myself a lot of things, but it's not like, I don't know. It's kind of semantics at that point.
But there's definitely teaching involved. I'm not
so sure that
it is. Yeah.
See, I think I kind of agree with Grant that I don't know if there are any more autodidacts. I think that as a definition.
No, there are, man. Are you kidding? For sure. Especially a lot of these, like, I think of like developer innovators, people who are.
Oh, you're so right, man. I am so.
We get
off
a lot
base.
Of knowledge.
No,
but it's in the same way.
100%
man,
right.
Hey, yeah. Listen. It's in the same way that those guys had access to a ton of knowledge, and they were just reapplying. I mean, what does that really mean? I think they were probably taking the knowledge of people, applying it to new problems they had learned and from other people, but then, you know, kind of created their own. I don't know. We're all just sort of, you know. Yeah, we have a new approach to learning, I think. I look at this through the lens of entrepreneur a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like in the same way that Elliot was starting up his web series and he didn't really know. I mean, he was accessing other people's information, but the way we approach, I mean, accessing other people's information, self-taught, all these things, the way we're approaching completing these projects is how do I get from A to B? And it's less about, you know, how do I do things the right way? You know, that doesn't mean to say we don't appreciate the craft of things and, you know, intentionality and knowledge, but it just means we're scrappy. We just want to solve this problem.
That is
we solve problems over and over and over.
Yeah.
So true. And Elliot, I know you can weigh in this. Like, when you start a project, there's some pressure to, like, learn to do it the right way so it's easier in the future and, you know, set a good foundation for yourself in application skill. But what I think I've done in my life, and you echoed this too, Elliot, is that sometimes you don't need to like care about the right way. You just need to get in,
hacker,
jump in,
yeah,
learn it however you can and do it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Vinny, that's just the hacker mentality, isn't it?
Oh, it so is.
There's no right way to do anything in animation, really. I mean, there's 100 ways to just do one little minute detail. Actually, I think I was talking to you about this the other day. So there's sort of a method that I use when I'm animating a bunch of different mouth movements to use for lip syncing and doing a bunch of different frames at a time. And so it's just a way that I've developed that's easy for myself to understand and get through things. And I went on YouTube, obviously, to look up just somebody else's opinion on how to do it. I was just curious about something, about how someone drew something or whatever. And just as an offhanded comment, this guy said, oh, and, you know, you just need to do things this way. It's just so much more efficient. And not that there's a right way or a wrong way, but this is what I use. And it was the exact same method I use. So it's sort of independently arriving at this just through experience, really. Trial and error.
Yeah, that's kind of how we roll. I mean, Vinny, you know I'm all about that efficiency.
You are all about it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's a religion to you, man. Efficiency is your religion.
It can be a little, I get nervous that I'm like going to make people uncomfortable. Cause like, I think when I start working with somebody, I like try and check and make sure it's okay. Cause you know, I'll see him doing something like really inefficiently and everyone has their own styles and whatever, but I'm just like, hey, like here's maybe a way that you could do it too. That would save you like a couple hours. And it's like, I mean, they're not all like that, but you know, it can be a finicky subject, you know,
it's tough because you don't want to like,
You don't
want to be the guy that corrects them, but at the same time, it just makes your brain bleed to watch them do it so efficiently, right, man?
Well, it just, yeah, it does, but it's more just like, I honestly came to the conclusion, I'm like, you know what, man? It's easier to not say anything, but that's kind of selfish.
That's like, a good point, though. You're trading, like, possible
I want somebody
discomfort
to tell me, man.
For, like, leaving them in the dark indefinitely.
Yeah, I ask people to, like, be honest with me. Because, dude, that's this approach. We just have a different approach than I think, you know, generations before us. And that's not necessarily bad. What I'm curious, though, is I know for me, one of the most helpful things, and it really continues to be a helpful thing. I've gotten away from it, but it's just this, like, deconstructing. So finding styles you like, deconstructing them, trying to, like, rebuild that on your own. I think that's something I did a lot more as I was learning, I mean, continuing to learn every day, but when I was less experienced, I think that was just like, you know, you sort of, it's just like kind of like a writer. You take on your favorite author's voice a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
I think that's 100% true. It's almost a little dangerous because when read something or watch something where you really like the writing style or the dialogue style, I find myself even like thinking and acting in that same style. And then when I try to write something, it's like completely obvious.
Mm.
It's tough to like, you need to give yourself some time definitely because just in a few days, you can distill down the difference between like inspiration and influence. Like,
oh yeah,
if my writing is being influenced by the dialogue in House of Cards, for instance, it gets like really a lot of attitude and too forceful, and my characters all come off as dicks. But then, in a few days, that influence,
they're constantly turning to the reader and like talking to the reader.
Yeah, right. Great show, by the way. But in a few days, even I can even notice it happening. It goes from being very forthright to now it's just a subtle, like, I can just pick the best tiny particulates out of that dialogue that I like, and then my writing seems more like my own.
Nice.
But I think it's definitely...
Yeah, I mean, have you done that with the animation stuff, or like,
I think it's that practice of sort of being over-influenced by something and then picking and choosing what you liked about that and incorporating it into your own style.
But it's not so easy to do consciously all the
time. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a...
But, I mean, a big part of learning new things is gathering your influences. Maybe not on quite so a direct level, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I think so. I think that, I mean, it's really, you know... Vince, if I may,
please.
It's really about that self-awareness.
Oh my gosh!
If we might pop back,
we're like 6 for 6 now.
Yeah, I'm. Thank you. Pretty much every time we talk about anything, I'm very reductionist, I guess, and I just boil it down to self-awareness. But you know, if I think about my influences, writing-wise, I mean, you know, Chuck, huge influence.
Chuck Palahniuk.
Since like I realized that and have developed more, I think. I've gotten away from that because I've like broadened my influences and I've found my own voice through writing. And with design, I think the same thing. I can pinpoint some people hugely influential. And I've even mentioned this to you. I look back at some of my work and I'm like, holy shit, I was just ripping them off. You know, it felt like I was jumping so far. Yeah, yeah. Well, not even Chuck so much in writing.
No, I get Chuck.
But design stuff especially, which is even more obvious. Like, it's ridiculous. Hey, you know, it's man, it's crazy to look back at it.
Dare I say it's a learning process?
Yeah.
Hey.
It's like life.
So, speaking of influences, this is I think this is a great time to jump into an off-topic topic. Do you agree, Grant?
Yeah.
So,
where you're going with this one.
I've got one in mind. The spirit of our guest, I would like to talk about cartoons. Ooh. And our favorite cartoons and why.
Oh, wow.
Bobby.
Okay.
I know, I can just hear you frothing at the mouth, Elliot. But I'm going to start with you, Grant. What do you have a favorite cartoon, either right now or of all time?
Jeez. I don't know. Ellie, you got anything?
I'll pass it.
You've got to have like a backlog. I'm sorry, man.
All right.
Ellie, hey, dude,
you go first,
cool.
Man.
You want me to go first? I'm glad to go first. You already know what I'm going to say.
Fuck it.
Vince.
You know what? Fine. No, man. No, we don't want to make him uncomfortable. It's the guest. so sorry, Elliot. That was really rude. If I think back to Saturday mornings.
Oh, yeah.
You wake up, get some cereal in those pajama bottoms, just kind of hanging out. It was Recess was a great one.
Great cartoon. Yes.
Hey Arnold was another.
Oh, man.
Rocket Power was one that kind of sticks out. Wiggity, wiggity, wiggity.
I still do that today, to this day.
Yeah, the generation behind us thinks you're an idiot. You know what I mean? Like,
well, they're right, but maybe
I know how our parents feel now. It's like, no, nobody gets it. Nobody gets it.
Nobody gets woogity woogity.
Yeah, that was a good one. I can't think of any other particular influences.
Those were good ones, though, man. Hey Arnold, especially, was just a classic.
That head, that football head.
Yeah. And the extremely adult themes that the cartoon addressed on a week-in, week-out basis.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. And cartoons really come a long way, man. Simpsons, I guess, that was a classic. That was...
Oh, yeah. I mean... All right, Elliot, do you care to jump in?
Well, you already knew what I was going to say. I mean, The Simpsons is my all-time favorite show.
Yeah, sorry, that just hit me. I was like, oh, man, of course, The Simpsons.
He is a disciple of Simpsons.
Wow, this guy. Yes.
So...
This guy.
Tell us a little bit why you love The Simpsons so much. What is it about that show, man?
Well, as I've talked to you about this before, I mean, it's The Simpsons is much like Saturday Night Live. It's an institution. So many people come in.
It really is.
So that has molded so many people's careers to the point where Disney and Pixar poach people from The Simpsons. So I think that, you know, it can be argued that it's had its ups and downs like anything over the years, but I think that it's just consistently one of the best, most brilliant, innovative, funny shows of all time.
Wow. That was a great parallel with Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
It totally is. It's an institution.
It very much is. And just like Saturday Night Live, it is kind of like a barometer of culture. Like, you can watch the trends and the important people and the social norms evolve from our society through watching The Simpsons, in part because it's been on the air for 26 years.
Yeah. Wow. And that The Simpsons definitely was, in part, you know, getting back to our topic is being self-taught, learning things. That was definitely a main influence for me growing up. I mean, I've always loved cartooning, so I would draw The Simpsons all the time, you know? And
you would just draw them over and over?
Oh, yeah. I was just in school, in not paying attention to things, you know, doodling, always The Simpsons. It definitely influenced my style of cartooning because there's, you know, it's such an iconic style. But other than animation, just the show itself, I think that there's so many jokes that would just breeze over the head of a kid, right? But that's why it's a family show, because everyone can enjoy it. But
exactly.
But there's things in there that there's references, and I always find myself wanting to know more and looking up those references and figuring out, you know, why that was funny, what the joke meant. And I've whenever I you know, apply for a job or on my resume, I have a little line that I use at the end of my cover letter, and I always say, if I don't know something, I'll figure it out. And if I do know something, there's a 90% chance I learned it on The Simpsons. So I think that's just a great summary of my personality.
That's
bold.
Priceless. Yeah. That's great, man.
Mm-hmm. Hey, question, and maybe this is an unfair question.
Sure.
Feel free to deflect
that's it. That's my favorite kind.
If you could, would you be a cartoonist just full time, like dedicate your life to that?
Huh, that's a great question. Actually, that's one that I've been rifling with for many months now. It's hard because it's something that I've always wanted to do from when I was young, and then I sort of got into graphic design and the advertising world. But if I could do it over, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, let me say, the exciting thing is you don't have to do it over. You can still do it.
Oh, I can still do it. And
you can do it now, man.
Uh-huh. And I'm, you know, I would love to be a return guest one day on this podcast.
I was just going to say, we'll have you back
in
on.
My 10,000th
We'll ring
hour.
The bells.
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
On the 10,000th episode, we're broadcasting live from the hospital. Vince and I are both dying.
But yeah, cartoons, man, a misunderstood medium in a lot of ways. Don't you agree, Elliot?
Oh, I definitely agree. Especially referencing The Simpsons again. I mean, cartoons, that was a cartoon that proved that cartoons could be smart. You know, they weren't just for kids.
Yeah, I've gained a new respect. Like, I can't say I'm a huge cartoon I'm a fan of cartoons, but to be totally honest, I don't spend very much time. Like, I spend a pretty limited time consuming media. And when I'm consuming media, typically I'm trying to look at like film stuff or maybe some TV stuff, just because I'm really interested in that from like the standpoint of creating that. Like long term, I'd really like to be doing that sort of production. Right. And so I don't, but I do look at cartoons for storytelling mechanics. And I'm a big fan of Chris Hardwick and The Nerdist.
Oh, yeah.
Who mm-hmm. will be on the show at one point.
it's happening.
Yeah. You keep saying it, right? Accountability, and then it becomes true, right, Vince? No, but those guys, like, he's really turned me on to that whole comedy culture. And once you start digging into the comedy culture, you start to realize there's this whole subculture. And then you realize, like, wow, these cartoons are really smart and hilarious.
Dude, absolutely.
And comedy is, like, a complicated thing. It's also simple, but it's just – it's a really cool thing. Like, I've really kind of, like, dove into that. And it's – I don't know. I'm just fascinated by comedy now. Like, Hardwick's just, like, ignited a passion in it.
He's stirred something up inside and – you've really become a connoisseur of comedy, if I may say so, over the last couple months.
Few months.
Yeah, and before we get off the topic of cartoons, I think one of my favorite cartoons for a specific reason is Garfield, because of how meta it gets. You've got the main, or some would say the main character, but the main supporting character, John Arbuckle, is a cartoonist, and about a third of every Garfield panel is just self-deprecation on cartoonists. So I think that's the first comic I read that actually made me think about the people drawing this comic that I was reading. So I think it deserves honorable mention at least.
Oh, that's a great point.
Dude, to hop back into the topic, that's just like a lot of things where you don't realize somebody's making this stuff.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Like, whether that's films or shows or music. And what's crazy is there's just this transparency now because people are figuring out how to make things. And that's what's super exciting to me. You know, Elliot did not go to school, quote unquote, or anything for animation. He's making a cartoon. And honestly, Elliot, what's to stop you from creating a full-blown 25, I mean, of course, constraints, but you could conceivably, you know, create a full show and you could find funding for it. You could find a way to support it. It's, I mean, Vince, we created Go West. We made, I mean, we're not quite done, but we made a documentary.
Right. We knew no permission. Bullshit about making films, making documentaries, and yet we made one.
And yet. Yeah. Yeah, it's
empowering.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's a really fucking crazy time. It's like simultaneously, I mean, at the end of the day, so exciting, but it's also kind of like, whew, it's a lot because there's so much opportunity. It feels almost like the stakes are higher, even though they aren't necessarily.
That's a good point, though. Mm-hmm. Huh. Now that anyone can do anything, there's nothing that says, like,
the only thing that stops us is typically ourselves.
Exactly. So we have to come to terms with that. That's exactly what it is. It's scary.
Oh, man. I think the way I stay sane is by, like, doing stuff.
I didn't ask for this.
Oh, they meant for me. I was like, whoa, is that too much information?
No, I didn't ask for the ability to do anything anytime.
Yeah.
And now I'm held to the standard of being able to do it? Oh, man.
The opportunity like that is presented with all of this access to tools is taking away all of our excuses.
Exactly. And I'm even stuck in this generation that loves to learn things. Like, there's no escape. I gotta learn things.
Man. But the sunny side of all this is it's exciting because, especially, you know, what I think keeps me sane maybe is not the pressure to, like, keep making stuff constantly or whatever, but it's the group of people that I've been doing it with and I get to do it with and I will hopefully expand and do more with. It's just like that is kind of – that's I think what – you know, even if the end product is shit, I know the process was probably pretty awesome if I was doing it with the people that I really
love. Oh, man. Journey, not destination, right, dude?
Yeah. But also, like, if the destination's shit, I'm going to be pretty upset.
Yeah, and I think
– Hey,
even
though... so – oh, go ahead, man.
What's that? Oh, yeah. So even though there's so many resources and the ability to do that, I think there are still a select few people that will take it upon themselves to actually do it still. I mean, people are
absolutely
will still continue to be impressed if you actually do something on your own, which is good.
That's
exactly right.
Wait, let's reel it in for a second. it's easy to get caught up in that, though, because things are so not just accessible, but like obvious, like you just see it, you know, it's just so widespread. When I just think of like, I guess what I'm saying is like from a broadcasting standpoint, mm-hmm. the people, because we're so connected and because we're so plugged in, the people who are doing stuff are constantly.
And you just get a constant influx of cool people doing cool things. And so you think it's more normal than it is. Is that what you're saying, man?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what I'm getting at.
Uh-oh, I put words in your mouth, dude.
This is usually where I make some sort of stupid sexual joke, and I'm not going to, so take that.
That's progress, dude.
Me.
That's progress.
I'm proud of myself.
Hey, man. So one thing I definitely wanted to touch on as we come into the home stretch here is you two are some of the most self-taught individuals I've ever met, and I wanted to know if you guys have any, like, tips, tricks, processes for when you're diving into this, like, foreign program or skill or task. How do you make it easier to learn, retain, and discover things about what you're trying to accomplish?
So kind words, Vince.
Yeah. Hey, man.
I know you meant them very complimentarily.
Absolutely.
Is that right? Complimentarily?
I'm not going to correct you because I'm going to get shit on 3 shows from now for it.
Only if you do it wrong. You're my rock of grammar and of usage. And, you know, it's like that's scary when you find out your rock is, like, maybe not what you thought.
Dude, oh, come on.
Honestly, though, what, complimentarily? All right, I'll let go. I'll look it up later. I'm writing it down. Elliot, yes. Maybe, I mean, you could put in the, you put it however you want, but maybe even in the context of this show, I was just kind of curious. How long did it take you, and then answer Vinny's question, mm-hmm. but how long did it take you to like, from conception to reality, or to learn these programs, or, like, get the first episode out?
From Jeff and I just talking about a show to actually making it, to sitting down and making the first episode, mm-hmm. it was probably 9 months, 8 months, because we wrote 3 mini-Bibles, which is basically like a prospectus for a show. So it's like character mm-hmm. art, all of the descriptions of the characters, some episode ideas, descriptions of where their world is, that kind of a thing. And we got some feedback on that. And then from there, we decided on the one that we thought we could pursue. And then we thought, wait, we actually have to make this. And then we sort of thought, what would be the most feasible in the medium? So we had to think of what story could we tell in these tiny 1 minute episodes? And that's sort of how we developed this idea mm-hmm. of the 5-part episode, the 5 minisode series. Mm-hmm. So, but I mean, it took a long time to get it developed, and it's sort of given me the inspiration to do more. So as I've mentioned, I'm doing just more different animated shorts because I wanted to develop a more broader breadth of work just for my own experience. So mm-hmm. I look at Danger Russ as definitely a passion project, but also an inspiration for me to do even more and try new things.
And I was just knocking the table in excitement, man. Good on you. Good on you sticking through it. 9 months?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's
dude,
in the
most
spirit
people
of
quit
this topic.
After like 30 minutes.
Yeah. Well, and it was interesting too because we actually talked to this producer that we got contacted with in LA, and he gave us his feedback on the mini Bibles as they were, and he just basically told us, okay, you're never going to get on TV if you don't know anybody, right?
Yeah.
So, so we just said, okay, well, maybe we can just do it ourselves. And getting back to just, you know, having the motivation to do something, when we sent him the URL for our first episode and we said, hey, we did this, he was blown away because he said, I didn't think you guys would ever do that. I was just, you know, telling you that it wasn't
damn
possible.
Right.
So it's still really cool, you know, and people are still continuously impressed by that kind of stuff. Not to say that I'm impressive by any means, but I think that it's a good lesson for anyone that wants to try something new. Just do it. And that's sort of getting what was your question, Vince, again? You know, what was...
Yeah, no, now that you...
I hijacked
that
one.
That is... It's really inspirational. And for people who want to follow in your same footsteps, do you have any, like, tips, tricks, or advice for going about that?
Oh, yeah. I was listening to this thing this is going to get pretty meta for you. I don't know if it's a well-known speech that Ira Glass did or...
Speaking about
Ira Glass inside
the podcast.
Well,
I know, because I'm like...
So you probably know what I'm going to say. So he talked about taste. And basically, if you have great taste, that's one thing.
You've got great taste, but the work you're making, it's not matching up to your taste.
Yeah.
And that's why everybody gets into this business, is because you've got great taste. And so you just keep making stuff. And then eventually, you know, your talent comes up with your taste. I don't know. I don't have an offhand Ira Glass. I didn't have one prepared.
That was pretty close.
That was pretty close.
A little bit more stammery.
Yeah. A little more stammery. It was like a Woody Allen. But
yeah, that was more Woody. I was channeling
Woody. I think it's because I see them as very similar people. Yeah. Woody's a little bit more stammery Jewish.
Yes.
Right?
You're right.
Oh, is that not
right.
That's not offensive, is it? Okay.
But I think,
but
even
as
though
you
that,
were
you know,
saying,
a, yeah,
Elliot,
I think that listening to that really resonated with me, and you know your impression was pretty astute. You have great taste, and you just have to start making things. And whenever I make something, I know that it's not as good as I would have wanted it to be, but it's just sort of you have to do it. And I'm a very efficient person. I like to complete things, and I'm very organized and sort of obsessive compulsive.
I would say yes.
And I'd like your thoughts on this. I'll give you a scenario. Would you guys rather? Would you rather play? Would you rather here?
Let's do it.
Would you rather have a project that you get through and finish, even though it's not quite what you wanted, or have a project that you just agonize over and keep working and working until you make it perfect, you know, however long that may be? Because personally, I would rather finish something, take it for what it is, look at it and use that and move on going forward. But maybe that's not what you guys would think.
I think I know how Grant's going to answer, but I got to agree with you, Elliot. I would rather ship it, get a product out the door, and be able to reflect on it and learn from it instead of be the guy who agonizes over something and never ships it.
Yeah.
I totally disagree. No. if it doesn't ship, it isn't art, in the words of Seth Godin. And I think this is kind of part of our hacker mentality that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's our accepting that our art is not infallible. It is not infallible.
Exactly.
It's like, everything can always be improved, but if it doesn't get out the door, it doesn't count. I think that's kind of been my mentality for a while. I will say I have kind of taken a small step back and said, you know what? If something can be improved significantly, I will take extra time on it. I mean, that's kind of obvious. But Vince, we've talked about that. We talked about that in an earlier episode, I think, where I was just like talking about how I told the client – and I'm all about getting that deadline.
I'm really all about it.
It sounds like similar to you, Elliot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I was like, I took a step back and I'm like, you know what? No, it's just, I actually genuinely need more time, and this is going to be better and it's going to be worth it. And I think that the mark of a professional is when you can accurately say that.
That's a great point. I mean, I think in a neutral scenario, I would err on the side of shipping it, but just shipping it blindly as a dogma is no better than the opposite, because you have to have the maturity and professionalism to realize when you do need to pull it back from the edge, do a little more work on it, and then ship it.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Well, hey Grant, do you have any like tips, tricks when you're learning a new task that you want to share with us?
Yeah. I mean, Elliot was so on point. And I feel like this could be like the last episode of the podcast, because this is something I've really kind of embraced, especially lately, is that, man, we are constantly just searching for answers when we just need to get our asses in motion and just start making stuff. That doesn't mean we can't like learn from insights and be more efficient and do better. But a lot of the times we just spend way, way too much time trying to plan and trying to answer questions with answers that we couldn't possibly know at this point, that we would have to go through the process of creating the thing to answer them. And I think we even talked about that with the podcast. There was a lot of stuff. We should have just started a little bit earlier. We would have like gotten an answer to this, or this wasn't an issue. We made
that's
it
a
issue.
Great point.
So I think it's having, you know, really shipping it at the end of the day with something. You know, we start Creators Go West, man. We saw it through and we continue to see it through, and we're learning. Green Room, the magazine. My God, man. We made a print magazine. We kickstarted a print magazine. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. And like now we have two issues out, and holy shit, man, I had no experience designing for a magazine. None. I finally feel like I have a pretty good grasp on it after two, you know, over 100 pages. But wow, I had no idea. Like, I was so stupid. I had no clue. But now I know quite a bit. I think the important thing with that, and something that has helped beyond just shipping it and doing that stuff, is like being very open about what you don't know and trying to find the very real answer. You know, a lot of times people aren't just going to give you feedback because it's like not comfortable. Why? In that same way, when I was talking about telling someone that I think there's a way more efficient way to use their computer or whatever, like not a lot of people are like want to offer that up because it's uncomfortable and it can be offensive and whatever. And so even like with this magazine, you know, we just shipped it and we were on site doing pre-press stuff. And I asked the guys like, hey, like, would you have done – like, should I have structured this differently? You know, because nobody wants to look like an idiot.
Right.
Everybody wants to be interpreted as the professional and the dude who knows what they're doing and whatever. And a lot of people just have this locked up knowledge that we can get quicker access to than even the internet sometimes if we just ask.
That's so true. Well, you know, I wanted to get one more point down while we're on our way.
Yeah, sorry,
out.
Vinny. I feel like I should bounce that back at
no,
you.
No, please. I'm about to bounce it. I think I heard this maybe more than anything else hidden as a string throughout our discussion, is that it's easier now than ever to learn, and you should very much go learn new things. But while you're learning, be making. And while you're learning, be doing. Because part of being empowered to learn more is applying that knowledge in new and exciting ways. And if you're just being the guy who just learns, then you're still not making that much progress.
Truth has been spoken. That was exactly, I think, what we were talking about with college. I think that's what I wasn't realizing, Vince.
Yep.
Thank you for saying that. It's just sometimes it's too theoretical when a lot of the really good learning comes from some of those projects where you have to do stuff, and the things where you're like, you know, a lot of these entrepreneurship, like what is an entrepreneurship class? But it forces people to go make stuff and like prove something. And that has the power to spark something that can like last the rest of their lives. And that is what is exciting to me.
I couldn't agree more, man.
Yeah,
I think that's really well said.
Elliot,
thank you so much.
Yeah, this was
what
great.
A gent sharing his insight.
Yeah,
so
cool. Thanks.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Where can people find me? Well, my portfolio website is elliotmatson.com. Danger Russ is at dangerrusscartoon.com. And then also on my website, I have an animated shorts section, which I will continuously populate as I have time to create more shorts. There's a couple up there now. And again, I love doing it, so I'll just keep making them.
Awesome, dude. And can we find you on Twitter? If someone wants to get in touch with you, can,
here's what I would say. If they've listened this far, like do Elliot a favor, do us a favor, tweet Elliot, man. Tell this guy he's cool.
Hit him
he
up.
Is pretty cool.
Thank you. Yeah. My Twitter handle, if I can even remember it, cause I believe
you could
probably search my name, but, it's at E Kenneth M.
E Kenneth M.
Yep.
You got sort of like prep school on us there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. you know,
it's
when,
like,
geez, is it E Kenneth M IV the fourth
junior
Esquire.
Esquire.
Yeah. Well,
I don't really
use Twitter a lot.
That's fair. That's totally fair.
That's unfair.
But if you want to tweet me, then I will tweet you back.
If I
now
have
you're on the
to.
Hook, man.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. Don't write checks your Twitter can't cash, bro.
Well, hey, thanks again, Elliot.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, guys. This is a lot of fun. I love the podcast, and I look forward to hearing more of it.
Yeah. Hey, we'll see you in a couple years.
Yeah, I want to come back.
Once you're a full-time cartoonist.
I'll come back.
You'll make the jump.
I'll come back as a millionaire, and then I'll come back again as a pauper.
As a billionaire?
No.
Oh.
And then I'll come back again as a second.
We were going different ways. Yeah. I was heightening.
He was retreading.
No, you have to go.
Beautiful. All right, man.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot, guys.
It's been fantastic. I think we can ship it.
Ship it we shall.